this morning with the sundown shining in.
Where's the money, Lebowski? Where's the f***ing money, head?
It's down there somewhere. Let me take another look.
I found my mind in a brown paper bag, but then...
106 miles to Chicago. We got a full tank of gas, half a pack of cigarettes. It's dark, and we're wearing sunglasses.
Hit it.
I tripped on a cloud and fell 8 miles high. I tore my mind on a jagged sky.
Okay, you know, you guys aren't privy to all the new... So, you know, that's what you pay me for.
I just dropped in to see what condition my condition was in.
Illinois Nazis. I hate Illinois Nazis.
Yeah, let's cut to the chase, okay? What are you guys selling?
I lost you $60,000. There is no one who wants to make that money back for you more than I do.
There's just one thing, dude.
What's that?
You have to use so many cuss words.
The f*** are you talking about?
Don't worry, nobody's listening anyway.
I woke up this morning with the sundown shining.
Hello and welcome back to Stacks and Jacks. I'm Tom Howie. This is Matt Lover on the board. S&P Futures up 1375. NASDAQ Futures up 98.75. Dow Futures up 74. We're trying to bounce back from yesterday afternoon's debacle. We were down a whole bunch. Dow was down 308, S&P was down 30, NASDAQ was down not as much, 149, but still 1.1%. Kevin, how are you?
Good morning. I, too, am a debacle, so...
Why is that?
I fit into the show today.
Ah, well, that's, we're trying to figure out, we had Powell and Janet Yellen talking yesterday, and it is startling. You get some of the stuff from the various sides of the aisle, people talking to these people, and you... Of course, it's a... It has nothing to do with, well, for some people in there, they're actually pretty good, but some of the people, it's all about them giving you their opinion on TV because they get their chance. All disguised as a question to the other two people, which is, I'm not so sure. When am I going to get my chance, Kevin?
You're saying interviewers have agendas?
Yeah, but when am I going to get my chance where I can just say, hey, bleeps, why did you stop doing the weekly money supply? And oh, by the way, why do you think you can increase the money supply by 25% and have inflation fleeting? Oh, by the way, when you say it's transitory, does that mean we're going to go back down, or this is the new starting level? Simple questions like that.
You know, I'm hearing a lot of people, you know, talking about that particular problem now, who weren't even a month ago or 2 months ago, and I'm seeing a lot more reporting. I suspect that if it all goes south, you're going to have all these people saying, yeah, see, I was talking about it for a long time.
Yeah, well, that's the way that is. That's why I'm going to try and get registered through Luckbox Magazine as the expert in extraterrestrial life. So whenever anybody gets here, I'm $1,000 a minute on CNBC as an expert. Because I said I was.
Hmm. Well, you know what? I don't know, Tom, you probably should go with expert on the lunatic fringe.
Well, that's the same thing. I mean, right? All we got to do is drive through Roswell like once or twice. We say we research the areas, right? What's the place in Nevada, too, that they supposedly have creatures at? So we just drive by both of those and stop on the side of the road, you know, take a picture, hope not to get arrested by some dog chasing us. And
we'll take a selfie with it in the background.
Yeah,
you got to do this right. Merely taking a picture, Tom, is so last decade.
A selfie right in front of the "Please do not enter, we'll kill you" type of sign.
Yeah. Or if you can jump on the other side of the fence and take the selfie and then jump back.
I would not be that limber. There's got to be some way to juxtapose the fence behind me or the other side of me or something.
You ain't jumping fences anymore.
No, we're not doing that anymore. It was one of our guys or whatever sent me this thing about the people that are trying to do the revisionist history. And I was going to do it this weekend and I forgot. I have to go through all my old emails from Kathy, or maybe I can just call her and say, send it to me again. The one she had with, the idea about the revisionist history.
She's still taking your calls then.
Oh yeah. She was pretty COVID hung up, and I bet she still has never shots, but I just feel like you're talking about a dog when you say you can't have your shots. But you take that dog out, he doesn't have his rabies tank. Anyway, the idea that, the poster basically says, you don't get to change history. It doesn't belong to you. It belongs to all of us. So you don't get to change it. I mean, you just leave it there, read it, interpret it the way you want, and go about your business. Don't try and change it. You know, and erase Columbus from the history books. I mean, who the hell's got over here? Anyway, but she sent me a picture of Joe Stalin, his work when he was standing on the bridge. It's like six guys in a row. He's got his arm around this dude, and the dude's by the railing. You know, he wasn't going to push him in or something. He's his buddy, a big arm around him. And all of a sudden, the next picture, the guy's gone, and you see Joe standing next to the rail. And the guy's just gone. And when
he got erased. He got erased from history, and then that meant he had to be taken out of the picture.
Taken out of the picture, taken out of all the history books, taken out of, like, the, if there was a military school over there, he was taken out of the graduating class. I mean, he had like 200 and some guys working on this. Some of the best artists and photography people in Russia were erasing dudes from history. So let's see. Matt Weber, who's Matt Weber? Was he ever here? And all of a sudden his name goes off every page in Stacks and Jacks, and he's off the mailbox, and his wife doesn't remember him. It's a weird. I wonder what they did with family members. It may just kill them, too. I mean, Joe is not. You know, I read on one of those Quora things, allegedly, you know how they killed him? This is a sneaky way to do it. Well, if you've ever had the occasion to be on blood thinners, the stuff is Coumadin, is what they call it, and it's been around forever. It doubles as rat poison. It essentially thins your blood, but you have to monitor it very much. They don't use it anymore. The new stuff is Xarelto and that kind of stuff that costs a fortune, but they actually poured a whole bunch of that, like, his vodka.
It costs a fortune, but it's not rat poison.
But it's not rat poison, yeah. But it doesn't really work much better. It's just that you don't have to keep going for tests and stuff.
Bad part, expensive. Good part, not rat poison.
It's not rat. Well, it's all a matter of dosage, as they say. Well, they put a hefty dose, and Stalin must have had some internal bleeding or something. I don't know. So somebody puts a hefty dose in his big jug of vodka he took before he went to bed every night. And sure enough, the guy bleeds out while he's asleep. Because nobody wanted to take a chance on killing the guy, because if he ever missed, it would have been bad for you, your family, and anybody you ever knew. And then you'd be out of history. Anyway, Kevin, we're going to spring this around you this morning, because we know you have an encyclopedic knowledge of this, even this crazy year. How does all the, if you don't know, we want to do more research, we'll talk about it Friday, but how does all the money, I mean, you went through this a few years ago, how does all the money work in the NCAA? How much you get per game, and as you go to the conference? I was thinking this is going to be a big year for the Oral Roberts Conference.
It is. You know what? I started to look at that a couple days ago because I thought it might come up, and I just, you know, I like pulled up the first article and got diverted and never got back to it. So I don't remember the dollar amounts, but it's hundreds of thousands. And the way it works is every time you play a game, you get paid. Your conference gets paid, and the payout is not just one time. You get paid six straight years that amount.
So you don't get all the money.
It is a significant boon to the conference. I mean, if you think about it, the conference and when they distribute it to their teams. So it's the NCAA money is baked into their budgets. Well, you know, their budget is what, pretty much? It's one game split amongst, I don't know, 10 conference members or however many there are, and you get your payout every year. So when you go play two games, then you've just doubled the budget, and you've doubled it for 10 years, you know, at least that line item in the budget. So it continues in for quite a while. It has an impact. It gives the conference teams a little shot in the arm and maybe a chance to step up in prestige. If you remember back when Butler was really successful in the tournament, and they at least went to the championship game once, and may have, and I don't know if they, I can't remember if they did the Final Four twice or if they just made it to the regional final the other time. But they were in the Horizon League at the time.
That was a coach from the guy who's on the Celtics now, right?
Well, I think that was before Brad Stevens. It may not have been. I'd have to piece together.
At least a couple of them were him, because he made his name.
Because Butler had a run of has had a run of very successful coaches. And so Stevens was one of several in a line, and he's a really good coach. I know all the Indiana people are hoping they could persuade him to leave the Celtics, but I think that's a pipe dream.
Yeah. Well, so, but So in other words, you get, say it's 150 grand.
Let's just say it's 400,000 for argument's sake.
For one game.
So what that means is that when you get into the tournament, play one game, you get paid $400,000. And you get paid $400,000 for six straight years. And so you do it again next year. Now, when you play two games, when you get a second game and a third game, then you're not just getting 400, you're getting 400 plus 400 plus 400 if you get that third game, and you get that for
so that's 400. See, when you first said this, it was years ago, I thought the number was like 250 divided by 6. I didn't think it was 250 a year. You mean it's that high?
Yeah.
All right, so if you have
so it's a real bonus if you know when one of those teams comes out of nowhere and wins a few games.
All right, so if you get 400, then I'm gonna guess the team playing gets 50 for expenses, and the other 350 split among the conference. Something along those lines would be my guess.
Something like that, yeah.
All right, so if you know that you're the
and most of them have guidance on the expenses. So if you take extra entourage, you're on your own.
So you can't just take like a 747 to Hawaii like the Irish did that one year.
Well, and you can do whatever you want. They're only going to pay you so much for it.
Well, didn't Colorado or Colorado State or somebody go to the Orange Bowl and they essentially spent the entire amount, so the rest of the conference got enough, but they brought so many people?
Yeah, they blew the allowance.
Yeah, they totally blew the allowance. But so if you are the Big Ten, or for instance, or the ACC, you want a normal year, you're going to have, you know, 10 appearances, say. It's probably that high. So that's $4 million bucks divided by, say, 10 teams in the... So you're going to get 400 grand a year per team, and you're going to get that pretty much every year, right? Because by and large,
yeah,
you're going to average
one of the major conferences, yeah, and you can count on, you know, always getting 7-8, you know, invitations. And yes, some of your teams are going to get multiple games. Some of your teams might get, you know, 5 games. But some of your teams are going to bow out early.
So, like, the ACC's got to have basically a hole this year, so is Big Ten. Somewhat of a hole. They still got Michigan. Big Ten could have played, you know, 30 games this year.
Yeah, they had 9 in the tournament, which is the most they've ever had. But 8 of them only played either 0 games or 1 game.
Well, you played 1 game.
Or, sorry, 1 game or 2 games. Yeah. And then only Michigan is going to play at least 3 games.
So they were probably licking their chops that they could get like 30 games this year, and instead they're going to get, you know, 15 maybe, 12 maybe.
Yeah.
Which is a big difference. And it goes on for a while.
Well, it is a big difference, and if you put yourself in the, you know, doing an athletics budget or doing a program budget, you know, you still have the money from prior years that's going to flow in, so you're not going to be gagging and dying here. But you can start projecting your cash flow and saying, well, I'm going to have to cover that. So sooner or later, I'm going to have to cover that.
Well, but you're talking about an Oregon State program. Now, I don't know who else is in that league. But those guys, I mean, it's an extra, you know, 50 grand a year or something is, or maybe even 100. It's, you know, that's 2 or 3, that's probably 3 scholarships. It's a lot. Right?
Yeah, Oregon State's in the Pac-12, so.
Well, that's right.
It is a lot. But you know, that's why when they talk about a conference being down, that's a real problem. You know, the Pac-12 hasn't gotten all that many bids lately. You know, compared to their historical norms.
Well, they've got 3 teams with 4.
It's a shift in the budget, and you know, anybody who's lived in the business world knows that that has a lot to do with things. So.
Well, now they got at least 3 teams with at least going to be 3 appearances. They might have somebody else. Anybody else getting there in that conference besides UCLA, Southern Cal, and these guys? Yo, did Oregon? They're the only 3.
Oregon's still in. They're in the Sweet 16.
Oregon and Oregon State.
Right, so they had 4. They got Southern Cal and
Colorado.
Colorado was in.
Colorado was in. Colorado is gone, right?
Yeah, they won their first game, lost their second game.
Right, so that's 2 appearances, and these other guys are going to get 3 apiece, and there's 3 of them, so we're up to We're up to 11. That's a lot. And plus, probably somebody's going to win.
I think the Big Ten's going to have more than that, even as bad as they were. I'm going to count it up. We'll see.
Well, they started with 9. You would hope so.
Yeah.
Does a playoff play-in game count, Kevin? Probably not.
I think it does.
Really?
It's a field of 68 now.
It counts for something, whether it's the full price or not. I don't know.
Well, they have to give you something. Yeah, if you pile in there, I would think. What? So hey,
I would think they should probably get a full share because you're getting a lot of those one bid conferences that are getting that bid. I don't, that kind of would screw them if it was a less than a full share.
Yeah, I would think so too. Anyway. Isn't it weird when watching hockey and switching sports or not ever seeing a Canadian team all year? I mean, I'm not a huge hockey fan, but that's a little strange.
By the way, the Big Ten so far has 14 appearances, but only Michigan remains alive. So they're going to have a guaranteed of 15 at minimum. And we'll see how far Michigan goes.
The ACC's got way less than that, right?
Well, yeah, but they still have two teams alive, right?
That's true.
So they could make some noise. Syracuse and Florida State.
Syracuse looks good.
They do this every year. They're terrible all season. They squeak into the tournament as a double digit seed, and then teams that aren't used to playing against that zone, they struggle against it.
No, that's true. And I think you guys are more into it than me, but I can sort of tell, especially with teams with a lot of young players. I think that probably hurt the Kentuckys and people like that. They didn't have enough time to turn these freshmen around. Even Illinois, you could see as good as their guys were, and I think pretty well coached. I mean, those freshmen, I watched them like their last five games. Those guys made some pretty dumb plays at the end of the game. Maybe you could tell they're not juniors. But they're not.
Yeah, well, I'm of the mind that in college basketball, a lot of people make a lot of dumb plays at the end of games.
Well, I suppose that's true. So, Kevin, you were mentioning earlier.
How many times... Did you watch the end? It came down to a last shot or a last shot before going to overtime or whatever, and somebody they just didn't get anything resembling a decent crack at it. You dribbled out the clock, got down to about 8 seconds, and then tried to run something and got nothing. It's common. I think that's the norm, and somebody going and getting a good shot is not the norm.
Well,
doesn't it look like Loyola is like the best coach team in the tournament? Like they don't, just watching them play, they look so organized. They have great spacing. They don't turn the ball over. They play great defense. They help each other. They rotate. They're under control. I mean, they just look so well coached. They don't have anywhere near the talent. I mean, they have very good players, don't get me wrong, but they don't have anywhere near the talent some of the top teams in this tournament. But they are so well coached.
Yeah, well, they do. They know how to play.
They remind me a little bit is.
I'd like to know more about their team because I always get fascinated with the leadership aspects of this, and who on the team? Because it's one thing the coaches have to, the coaches have to be leaders too, obviously, and they set the tone. But it always works well when they can work through that one or maybe even two leaders on the team. It's sort of the difference between the boss giving you orders and the peer pressure of some really trusted, respected coworkers. And I think that's, when it comes to basketball, if the coach can work through some leaders, boy, that's just so much more powerful in terms of setting that tone, making sure that you have a team that's unselfish, making sure you have a team where everybody gives their effort on defense, because you have the people on the court who, the whistle blows and they pull everybody together and go, hey, we're not doing it on the defense, let's get it going. And everybody wants to because the team leader said, let's do this.
As a guy who played ball an awful lot, not as much as Maddie probably, but there's nothing harder in the world than to be the only guy on your team playing defense. Talk about useless.
Oh, it makes the game not fun.
Yeah.
If you're competitive like we are, and if you're taking the time to play something you want to win, and you're the only one trying on defense, you might as well not even play. It's just not even fun.
I was mentioning to your buddy.
But when you get with a good group where everyone's playing defense, that's usually when you stay on the court for a while because you win a few games in a row, and then it becomes really fun.
Yeah, you don't have to sit on the sidelines and shoot free throws to get in again.
Yeah, and I think Cameron Krutwig, the senior big man who's kind of, they run everything through him, I think he, to me, outside looking in, he really looks like that leader that Kevin's talking about. And he's a senior now, but he was I think he was maybe the only real contributor on the last Final Four team when he was a freshman, sixth man, but played a lot of minutes on that team. And they really seem to respect him, and he brings a lot of energy, and he's a Chicago area kid, and I would say from the outside looking in, he's that guy you're talking about.
Well, I was mentioning to your buddy Frank, Kevin, that I should take the same attitude with Stacks and Jacks, because Porter Moser says, I want a team where people have character and not a team of characters. So there's something to be said for that. But you know,
you can have a team that has characters who have character.
That's true too.
That's right.
You know what?
Then it's a lot of fun.
I'm gonna distance myself from the field here by saying, you know what that team absolutely reminds me of? It's almost like they stole the playbook. They look almost exactly like, not the same level because they didn't have Chet Walker. They look exactly like the Bulls teams in the Dick Motta era, where your point guard only shoots if he has to. All he cares about is distancing and getting the ball to people in the right spot. I think a lot of young people, when they're the shooting point guard, are very confused. I wouldn't want to be a good forward on that team, because whenever the play is to you, or whenever you get yourself open, it's hard to work yourself open. You never get the ball. It pissed me off big time. Because I think you see a lot of that going, especially with the freshman point guards. And they also have a high post center that can pass very well.
So, well, they run everything through the high post center.
But nobody does it anymore.
And he does dribble handoff and at the top of the key, but he doesn't shoot. He's made 1 3 in his 4-year career. He doesn't shoot from the outside. But they run that action off of him over and over, and then he either hands it off, fakes it, and then spins the other way, and then they have, you know, a 2-on-1 opportunity in the half court. It's really interesting to watch, and Illinois had no answer for it.
Well, it looks like Norm Van Leer and Tom Barnicle. It looks the exact same way, only on a smaller level. The Bulls played how many years, and even after Nate Thurman became a starter and Barnicle was a second stringer, he was probably
even after Artis Gilmore became, because Nate Thurman was the starter for 1 year.
Yeah, well, but then
even during the Artis Gilmore years, you're right. You described this before. They bring Borwinkle off the bench every time they'd feed the post, they'd feed Gilmore, and everybody when they stalled, it was because everybody stopped and watched Artis work in the post.
Yep,
because he was so big and strong.
He's
really
a huge man,
really good ball player. But when the team started watching, then they just call timeout, bring in Borwinkle. He'd set up in the high post, and everybody would start running around again.
And all of a sudden, within the first two times down, there would be a wide-open layup to Matty Gukas. He'd go through two screens, go behind everybody, and there would be Borwinkle could flip it over his head, blind pass, and the thing would go in.
I haven't heard that name in a long time, Matt Gukas.
Oh, yeah, he was a good player.
I remember him more as a broadcaster, because obviously I wasn't around when he was a player, but he was a big-time guy in basketball. One other thing on Moser, he was a longtime assistant for a lot of different programs before he briefly was a head coach at Illinois State. Then he went back to being an assistant, and then he was hired at Loyola. But he claims to have really learned the most under the late Rick Majerus, who is a legendary college basketball coach. And I see a lot of Rick Majerus in the way they run stuff. Those Utah teams that Rick Majerus had that just played so under control, ran everything through the high post. Andre Miller at point wasn't an outside shooter, but he could penetrate and dish. And then you had Keith Van Horn and Michael Doliak and those guys. Those teams were awesome.
Well, he had spectacular players at every spot. The guy that I always thought was really special, obviously, was Johnny Wooden. Not because he won all the time. That helps. But he won. I mean, we
because he bought the best players.
Well, he had the best players, but he also won with a center-dominated team, he won with forward-dominated teams, and he won with guard-dominated teams. He basically looked at his players and said, this is what we're going to run this year, this is what I got. Where most guys have a system.
Oh, and they never had selfish. They had great stars, but they never had selfish teams.
Right.
They shared the ball, they moved the ball, so it didn't matter. You could have Kareem and Bill Walton, it didn't mean that they never got in that mode where they'd pass it in the post and just watch.
Well, that's right. He had great people. But I'm saying, some years, the guard scored. The next year, the forward scored. The next year, the center. I mean, you got the ball to the guy that was good. Where there's teams now, you could be an Elgin Baylor who just recently, unfortunately, passed. And some of these teams, you never get the ball. Right? It depends on who you have out there playing. But I always thought that your point guard if he's your leading scorer, you either have an amazing star or you got a problem.
I agree.
Because your first job is to get everybody else where they're supposed to be. But, you know, whatever. I mean, the Bulls obviously had a forward that.
Another thing college teams don't do, speaking of that, is they don't do spacing very well. On the whole, some teams do, but and Loyola sure as hell does. But a lot of teams just, you know, they don't handle spacing. So, you know, the idea of what does open mean is kind of weird, because there's I'm open, get me the ball, and there's I'm open in the flow of the offense, which is a little bit different.
Well, how much off the top of your heads, basketball mavens, there can't be that much difference between the pro college women high school 3-point shot from the corner, because they're all kind of stuck in the corner. Is it like a few inches difference? It can't be much.
No, it's a lot different. I'd have to.
I'm talking about the 3-point because
the pro distance is so long, it runs out of room in the corner, so it becomes it's like a foot shorter.
That's what I'm saying. In the corner, they must all be sort of the same or pretty close.
The NBA corners is 22 feet. I'll track it down. The NBA corners is 22 feet. I do have that, but it's 23.9 at the arc.
Right. So I'm saying it's like a. I remember
it's
when
almost 2 feet
when we played one of those charity things, and I had sort of retired. So I go to play this charity thing, and I'm taking practice shots. The 3-point line is a long way. I mean, if you'd never played with a 3-point line, which I never did. My jump shot didn't make it from there. I had to kind of sling it. I mean, it's some practice to get it from there.
In my basketball days, the free throw line was a long way. So.
Well, that's, I mean, if you were a guy who was good from the top of the key in our area, so, you know, at the Rockney or someplace, you had a pretty good outside shot. But now you got to be, you know, 4 feet behind it or 3 feet. Top of the key's a ways.
Yeah. Well, I always told people I had center skills in a guard's height. Truth be told, I actually had backup center skills.
the men's arc here is 22 feet 1.75 inches at the arc and 22 feet in the corner. So it's actually the same in the corners as the NBA. But the NBA arc goes, you know, like a foot and 8 inches longer.
The women got to be close to the same thing in high school.
The women is 20 feet 9 inches.
So they're shorter in a corner too.
Yeah. So
in high school is what, like the women?
High school is the same as women. Yep.
I don't know. I'm not okay. We have to head off the break. I was looking for the Irish in the women's thing, but I didn't find them. SP Futures up 16.
And in hockey, I'll tell you how that worked out when we come back.
SP Futures up 104. Be right back. Stacks and Jacks.
How much confidence do you have that your investments will make you wealthy? Do you truly know the odds? Welcome to Luckbox, the control freak's guide to life, money, and probability. Luckbox shows you how to gauge the likelihood of success before you commit to an investment or any other decision. And Luckbox is free for 1 year at luckboxmagazine.com/jocks. Each new issue dives deep into the current investing climate, separates the signal from the noise with relevant trade ideas, and equips you with cutting-edge tactics you don't already know. Luckbox is the essential magazine for proactive investors who are hell-bent on pursuing life, luxury, and happiness through sports, fitness, travel, food, spirits, music, and a whole lot more. Smart investors don't bet on possibilities, they play the probabilities. Luckbox is $7.99 on newsstands, but you can subscribe for 10 free digital issues at luckboxmagazine.com/jocks. Don't rely on luck. Get Luckbox at luckboxmagazine.com/jocks.
Hello, this is Tom Howell, the Chief. Confused about investing these days? I suspect you are not alone. Investing was never easy, although at times it may have seemed so. I think one reason behind the current concern, although maybe not explained as such, is how the fluctuation in the American dollar and the associated politics is affecting your investments and your wealth. It may not be enough to make some money in your investments. You may need now to make enough to exceed the amount that your leadership is depreciating the value of the dollars you've worked your whole life to accumulate. That same leadership has seen fit to maneuver risk-free interest rates to near zero. Providing positive risk-averse returns in a zero-interest and declining real wealth environment is by far the toughest assignment I've ever had in my years as a money manager. I'm sure that a lot of you have heard that one way to possibly deal with this problem is to invest in so-called hard currencies like silver and gold, the idea being that they will retain their relative value in the face of devaluation of paper currencies like the dollar. To be honest, I have never been a gold bug. I've always had faith that having enough dollars and a good investment strategy was good enough. Now I'm not so sure. But I do know that if I did invest in gold or silver, I'd want to do it in the same manner as we do with PTI for investments in the market, with defined risk. If you feel the need to invest in gold or silver, we can do it using the same strategies that we use for our protected index program. No matter what you invest in, we feel that you need to know and control your risk. Find us at PTISecurities.com. That's PTISecurities.com.
Are you one of the millions of people who suffer with pain? Do you wake up in the morning with stiffness in the lower back or neck? Why are you using medication to cover up the symptoms without treating the actual cause? Painkillers, muscle relaxants, and anti-inflammatories are not the answer. At ChiroMed, physicians are trained to detect the cause of your symptoms and to correct the underlying problem. If you're ready to listen to common sense and do what it takes to make changes in your body that can affect your health for the rest of your life, give ChiroMed a call and set up a complimentary consultation. They are located in Orland Park and can be reached at 708-403-2727. 20,000 patients over 22 years have been treated at ChiroMed, and over 90% of them have had positive results without medication or expensive surgery. Isn't it time you did something good for your body too? Give ChiroMed a call. 708-403-2727. That's 708-403-2727. Let's get you pain-free and living again.
Stocks, jocks.
Stocks and jocks.
Stocks and jocks.
You are out of control.
Right here, right now, right here, right now.
Hello and welcome back to Stocks and Jocks. I'm Tim Allen, just my Weber on the board. S&P Futures up 15, Nasdaq Futures up 97. We're trying to make up from yesterday's down day as the chairman and our Secretary of the Treasury, Janet Yellen. Don't you think when we're spending trillions of dollars, we could get a decent camera for these people? Just saying. Then the one guy was trying to call in from his phone, and he was trying to do a facey in his car.
Selfie?
Well, with a camera, I guess. Is that,
or a Zoom call?
Yeah, he was trying to Zoom call him from his car. I mean,
that's interesting.
Yeah, it wasn't working out so well. Dow Futures up 139. Over in Europe, we've got the DAX down 59.4%, FTSE down 6. Our big move down yesterday was in the late afternoon, so these guys are catching up a little bit, I guess. CAC around down 4, call that flat. Over in Asia, we've got the Nikkei down 590, that's 2%. Shanghai down 44, that's 1.3%. Hang Seng down 579, that's 2%. They fall into correction territory in the Hang Seng. Correction territory. You heard it first here. Dow Jones yesterday down 308, that's 1%. S&P down 30, that's 0.8%. And the NASDAQ was down 149, that's 1.1%. Russell's getting whacked. I mean, Russell's been down probably 3% in the last couple of days. So I had some people that came out of that, and I guess I'm going to try to put somebody in there today, maybe, but I'm not sure. Right? A lot of cash. And yesterday was a good day to be in cash. 10-year, 1.62, down one basis point. Bund minus 0.35. They made it up to minus 0.28. It's hard to talk about that negatively. But they've actually dropped 7 basis points into further negative territory in the last couple of days. Same thing, Japanese yen. They were positive 0.12, now they're down to 0.06. Oil up $1.42. They got whacked pretty good yesterday. It's 2.5%, but still under $60, $59.18. Brent down 141, $62.20. Natural gas unchanged, $2.51. Arbob up 2 cents at $1.92. We've got gold up $3.60, but still $17.28, still down. Silver up a dime, $25.33. Copper up a penny, $4.09. And our crypto, Bitcoin is up $1,200 to $56,338. Anyway, we got first traffic, weather, sports.
37 minutes past the hour. Good morning to everyone out there. We already have a crash down on the south side. It's a serious crash with injuries on the inbound Bishop Ford just before Cottage Grove Road. So all kinds of delays with crews on the scene and emergency workers to try and get that cleared. But that's an area you want to avoid if at all possible right now, because it's going to be a while to get that accident cleared on the inbound Bishop Ford. It's not affecting the Ryan further inbound. No issues on I-57, although there's a bit of a slowdown, it looks like, but no accidents or delays there. Stevenson looking good. Same for the Eisenhower. Edens and Kennedy are all quiet. Lakeshore Drive looking good in both directions. Off the expressways, it looks like we have an issue. 47th Street between South Wabash and South Michigan is closed due to an accident. Then down in the southwest, near Joliet, we have traffic lights not working. That's causing delays on Route 53 right near Laraway Road. So you want to keep that in mind as well. Everything else all quiet out there. Weather today, it's going to be a nice early spring day today. Partly cloudy skies, a high of 57. Could be a little warmer than that inland. Right now it is mostly cloudy and 54 degrees downtown. For our Phoenix listeners, partly cloudy with a high of 73. Right now it's clear and 48. In sports, the Blackhawks jumped out to a 2-goal lead and held on to beat Florida last night 3-2. Coyotes topped the Avalanche 6-5. NBA basketball, Bulls were off last night. They'll host the Cavaliers tonight at the UC. That's a 7 p.m. tip-off. The Suns beat the Heat 110-100. Cheap.
Kevin, I was mentioning to Mr. Matt Weber on the way in that I saw something in the Hawk game I've never seen. I don't watch that much hockey, but the Hawks were up 3-1 with 5 minutes to go, and one of the Hawk guys gets a penalty, so they're in PK, penalty kill mode, and with 5 minutes to go, your buddy Coach Q, Quenneville, who's now coach of Florida, pulls the goalie and to make it a 6-4 advantage, and it worked. They scored. I don't think I've ever seen that before, that early.
Oh, I've seen that. Yeah, I think that's becoming more common practice. To seize the moment, so to speak, when you get a chance, because otherwise, in general, if you're any good at all at penalty killing, at the right time. I don't want to get a penalty at the time that they're going to pull the goalie, but with maybe 4 minutes left or so, and you want to kill off a couple of minutes, getting a penalty is not the worst thing, as long as you get possession of the puck and you keep shooting it down at the other end of the ice. You can kill off 2 minutes of game time pretty easily with an effective penalty kill.
Well, yeah, but you still rather do it with five people instead of four. You don't want somebody sitting in the penalty box. Just saying.
I'd rather not. You know, probably on balance, I'd rather not, and I'm sure the statistics don't bear it out. But what I'm saying is it's not the worst thing in the world because you do get to ice the puck, which you don't, you know. If you have a good PK, then you are actually going to shave some time off the shave some important time off the clock.
It just seems weird.
The most important part of the game at that point.
Well, it probably makes some sense, but it's weird because there's 5 minutes left in a 2-goal deficit. I mean, you don't have much time, but you have some time. And if all of a sudden the first thing that happens,
you can always put the goalie back in.
Yeah, but once all of a sudden the guy finds the empty net, now you're pretty much skunked. Wrap it up.
Yeah, you're betting the game with 5 minutes to go instead of 2 minutes to go.
Okay. Yeah, basically. But
it's calculated because you already have the man advantage and you're getting two. I don't want the penalty in the last 2 minutes because they're definitely going to pull the goalie then.
Yeah, yeah.
And not everybody's going to do what Q did, but otherwise, with 2 minutes, they're definitely going to pull the goalie out and take that, give you a two-skater advantage.
I always liked him. Patrick Kane had his 1,000th game last night, so they had a little thing before the game, and he came out and was applauding him and stuff, which I thought was pretty cool.
I think, he did an outstanding job for the Blackhawks.
Well, plus, if we ever have to wear ties again, I would really like to steal his tie collection. He's got the nicest ties.
He's got great ties, great suits in general.
Yeah, yeah. And Coach Q always looked good.
And somehow, looking very dapper, he still maintains that important aspect of being a hockey coach, the ability to look like you're pissed off
the whole time. Yeah.
Pay attention to the hockey coaches. Almost every one of them just looks like they're perpetually pissed.
The new Hawk guy's not so bad about that. The other guys always were. The old type, high, little short guys with kind of bullet heads. They're all kind of weird looking dudes to start with. I mean, Coach K was pretty.
Speaking of hockey, I told you I was going to tell you how the Irish got in the NCAA tournament. They play this weekend.
The men or the women?
The St. Lawrence won the ECAC tournament and the automatic bid. Now, St. Lawrence wasn't the best team in the conference. Quinnipiac is by far. So Quinnipiac was going to get into the field no matter what. So St. Lawrence stole a spot, and it turns out that Notre Dame was the first team out. Then St. Lawrence's coach tested positive for COVID, and they had to bow out.
Ah.
So Irish got in as the rested and ready, here we are. they are the 16th team in the 16-team conference.
The men never made
tournament,
it?
I mean.
The men never made it?
No, that... which men?
No, I thought you were talking about the Irish women. The Irish men... The women have a hockey team? I don't know.
Hockey.
I know, but some...
What in the world are you talking
some
about?
Some teams, some colleges have women's hockey teams now.
Yeah, some do, but Notre Dame doesn't.
Oh, right. That's what I thought you were talking about. Before the break, no. You mentioned Notre Dame women, so I thought... I didn't think they had a women's hockey team. It would have been news to me, so it's the guys.
I think I did mention Notre Dame's women.
Well, whatever. We'll have to play the tape. We'll replay the tape, as they say. Hey,
replay that tape, damn it. Prove it. Prove me right or prove me wrong.
Yes. Any more... Well, I started the show by saying before we get into more interesting stuff like the NCAA, the interesting questions that they were asking Janet Yellen and Paul yesterday, and he's really got this idea that he can make this inflation be very temporary. And... of course, they start asking them all kinds of tax questions and so forth, which really are just a mirror for the tax opinion that the senator representative has, right? It has nothing to do with these guys. And but the one thing that is, as everybody can sort of tell who listens, it's sort of irritating me is that when they ask him a question regarding like a $3 trillion infrastructure program, plus they don't ask the question in the right way, which is aggravating. They must do it on purpose because they don't really want an answer. Instead of saying, "What do you think about the $3 trillion plan?" Right on the heels of a $1.9 trillion other plan we haven't even pulled out yet, we're in the midst of, and he starts talking about that's Congress's business, it's not mine. Well, the question ought to be, is out of the $1.9 trillion, you bumps are going to essentially print $1.6 trillion, and you're going to borrow $300 or somewhere number like that. You know, I might not be exact, but I'm probably pretty close. Are you prepared to print another $3 trillion? Because guess what, we don't have the money. So don't tell me like I'm a third grader that this is a Keynesian sort of plan. It's a monetarist plan, because if you don't cooperate, if you tell these people I'm not printing another dime for you, the plan falls apart. So don't tell me that you're not involved and it's not your business. I mean, would anybody ever say that in this world?
No, but I don't think you get very far asking questions that way.
But somewhere along the line here, we got to get the truth.
If I've learned anything from attending many a coach's press conference is that if you ask that direct confrontational type of question, that you're not going to get an answer. You just won't. It won't resemble anything that you've that would be useful. On the other hand, if you can frame the question in a way that gets them to basically to talk shop, because everybody likes to talk about their work and how they go about doing it and so on. So what you have to do is you have to come up with a way of asking the question that just gets them to talk about process, about how they go about supporting. Whatever has to be done, what their piece of the pie, of the task is, et cetera. And I don't know. I'd have to think about this one, is to think about how I'd frame it. But that's how you have to do it, and then you get them to go on forever.
Well, you need to be. My intention would not to be something that went viral on YouTube, but my intention at some point, I'm tired of the people dodging around the thing. At some point, you just say, is the wall blue or green? Yes, one word answer. I don't want the man talking about fiscal policy time after time after time when it isn't fiscal policy. There's no money there. If he says he's not giving them any printed money, the policy falls apart. So to tell people he's not involved or it's not his business is such a fat ass lie. I can't even describe it, Kevin. I mean, we've reached that stage. You know, I'm not. I don't like insulting people and being that direct. But at some point,
I'm telling you that the direct question is seldom going to get you an answer. But if you can get them talking, if you can, I mean, heck, I've had times I've asked Mike Bray questions that got me, 5-6 minute answers. So when you get them talking, even for 2 or 3 minutes. Rather than a pretty quick yes or a no or a deflection, sooner you're going to get some information about it, because once they start rolling, they can't stop.
But these guys are, let's put it this way, they're a lot better at telling you nothing than Mike Bray. mean, they do this all the time. And they, and Mike Bray doesn't have a 5-minute meter on you that he actually, that the, where the alarm goes off. Where these guys only have to make it to the 5-minute mark with Kevin O'Neill. And the next guy has got his whole list of stuff that, that he cares about him being on TV. He'll never follow up. I mean, it's, so I mean, I'm saying the whole
right, but he's, but in this case, he's not managing the meter. What he's doing is he's getting a question that he really likes answering.
That
sparks the interest and gets him rolling. And then in the process of rolling, you might get some dicey little stuff.
Well, they ended up getting into tax policy with some of the, and of course, you know, as much as no matter what the crisis, be it COVID, being we're broke, being whatever. Whenever you get the Democrats and Republicans in a room, immediately somebody opens their trap, and you can tell their policy. They get some Republican lady in there, and she immediately—I wish I had her name. Actually, I'd love to have her in from the show, but she immediately launches into raising taxes on the rich or the corporations has been proven to really like hurt the middle class. I'm going, what are you talking about? I mean, at some point here. I mean, I'm not. Everybody knows that I'm not for taxes going up ever, but these guys are flat ass broke. I mean, we're spending double what we're taking in. You know, which is I don't know if we've ever gotten there except for World War II. Who's the guy they asked? Was it wasn't Bonnie and Clyde that killed them? It was a bank robber? The guy says, "Why do you rob banks?" And he says, "That's where the money is."
Dillinger,
yeah. Thank you, Manny. And I mean, at some point here, when you've got corporations down to paying 7% of the taxes in the country, everybody. I don't care how Republican you are. That's a little light, Kevin. It's a little light, especially when you're talking about the biggest ones now with the COVID are paying not a whole hell of a lot, and they're taking everybody else over. You know, which is really not where you want to go. So not only is your tax policy caused some, I guess some disorientation, shall we say, but it's also caused a lot of people to have a lot of money that other people don't have and are taking them over. Right? So on a couple of accounts, I mean, I don't care. I'd love the tax rate to be 25%. I don't want it 35%, especially because people pay state and local and everything else are paying fees. But the point is, you can't have somebody paying 15 that's bigger than all the guys that are paying 35 and wonder why they get bigger every year. I mean, come on. I mean, am I right? I've gotten, as I've aged, Kevin, it's so simple to me. If some other bleep doesn't pay his share, my share goes up, and I'm pretty tired of it. I mean, that's a Southside simple part of it, right? If Amazon doesn't pay taxes, I mean, somebody else has to, and I'm always one of the somebody else. And I'm guessing our listeners are in there. Where am I wrong here?
Well, you're saying you're tired of being, of holding the bag, Alt.
Essentially, yeah.
Essentially.
And it's going to happen again somehow here, right? I mean, they're going to end up with.
Oh, yeah. At some point, it's almost like you find yourself saying, "Well, what'd you expect?" But
well, yeah.
But that doesn't make it okay.
Well, but
it just makes it difficult.
But everybody. I mean, I go back. I've mentioned this before. That you weren't. You were 2 years younger. You weren't in the famous Dinkolo class when. We ended up with the answers, but it was an open book test to the final, right? But it wasn't like, we stole them. You know, they were like in the teacher's manual book, which somebody had. The problem was, you had to work your way through them. You can't just put the answer down. It was an accounting test, so it was how you got there was the whole thing. So, I don't know if you remember this, but my job was to go through. And go through all the stuff and make the answers right, they go all the way through. It's like somebody, you can't just come up with the calculus answer. Somebody's got to go through the work. I was the guy who did the work. Actually, Bob and I did the work, and because Bob knew taxes way better than me. So everybody else sort of, shall we say, worked off our stuff. Is that a fair way to say it? So including our buddy Slim, who will go nameless. So get a load of this, Manny. We get to the final. Instead,
I think you just named him.
Yeah. Well, nobody knows his real name. But we're sitting there, and Slim, the knucklehead that he is, and just like spirits through the stuff, writes it down real quick, and gets up after like 15 minutes and walks out with all the right answers on his test. I was ready to kill him. I said, can't you sit there for 45 minutes and make it look like you're actually doing something, you idiot, that I just did for you? Anyway, we didn't get caught. That was a good news. Just saying. But would you have killed him, Eddie, or what?
I prefer to think of it as collaboration rather than...
Yeah, collaboration. Well, when you talk about open book tests, I'm sure this happens all the time now, whatever we're working at home. But no, we had to actually work through all this stuff. It wasn't like, well, some of the Wii's did, let's put it that way. Anyway,
I don't give tests for just that reason.
Yeah, it's or you got to make people write stuff.
You do a final project.
Well, I remember, boy, in most of the stuff though, you got the blue book out and you're writing your way through, and you had to write it right in front of everybody, and it was ugh. But then you had to know how to write too. I mean, actually put the pen to paper, which is tough enough. But you couldn't read any of my stuff now. The only thing good is that the only people that had worse handwriting than me were the professors. They actually could read it. They were pretty good at reading it. But anywho, when we talk about what these guys were saying, I mean, at some point here, we need a comprehensive tax policy here, Kevin. It doesn't advantage people and cause other problems in addition to the taxes. I mean, how many takeovers were financed by the money people had over in Europe all those years? And then you can't have shady rules like you can't bring your money back to this country except if you buy treasury securities because we want it back here. I mean, you wonder if there's any kind of... Can we ever get people from both sides of the aisle to spend 3 weekends in a row at Camp David and say, hey, look, let's redo this whole mess somehow and try and get it to where it's even for people? Because then again, if you're the people, you don't want it even, right? I mean, when people will say a fair tax is 20%, but there's a lot of people, if the tax is 20%, they want to pay 10, right? So the goal for a lot of people is for them to pay less than everybody else. And somehow the rest of us have not done very well at stopping that, I don't think. Just saying.
Yeah, I don't think there's a lot of people who say, I want to pay less than everybody else. It's just, I think the mindset is, I just want to pay less. I don't care. I don't even think about everybody else. It's a total...
Well, yeah, they just want to pay less. Well, I mean, you can't tell me that as brilliant as he is, listen to him tell you that the Bill Gateses of the world, that those people had operations over in Europe and the drug companies, that they don't know that their advantage in taxes caused them to have extra money to buy places that you and I couldn't buy. I mean, they can't be that stupid or that, you know, a veil over their eyes. They can't be that stupid. They must know that that's where they got the money from. Right? I mean, they can't. So the tax...
Oh, they know darn well.
Yeah.
If they don't, their accounting firm does.
Yeah, I mean, you're not asking the right question. You know, when I got this inheritance, did I really earn it or did I get it because I was the lucky sperm club? Buddy, you're the lucky sperm club. Okay. I mean, if you don't know it, somebody will tell you, would think. But, I mean, I think these guys are just backing themselves into a corner here, Kevin. And I couldn't believe when the Turkish, if you listened to yesterday's show, the Turkish headlines about the guy bounced is essentially his Jerome Powell for the third time in 2 years, I think it is. Their interest rates, the guy wanted to move them to 19.5%, and because their inflation is pushing 20. Or something, or maybe he's more than 20. I said, you know, I know without even looking, but just for the show, I got to make sure of myself. So I dig up, and sure enough, I get Turkish money supply, and it's in the last 2 years, it's up like 2.5 times. Now ours isn't that bad, but ours is going to be, it's going to be up 50% in 2 years. So for us to think that we're not, you know, Turkey light here, that 3 or 4 years from now, some guy, Nat Powell, is going to be struggling. And taking all kinds of heat as he runs his interest rates up. When Powell says we can just raise interest rates up a little bit, which he said yesterday if we get an inflation problem, his little bit, he's giving people the impression. I don't know, I don't know if he knows what he's saying, but what people are hearing, we could be talking 2 or 3%. Kevin, they're up to 19.5% in Turkey. The number you have to get to actually put the screws on an economy that's running on inflation. Where did we have to go in the 70s and 80s? We had to go to what? 14? 12 and a half, 30 year? I mean, we're not talking about going from 1 to 4 or 1 to 3 here. I mean, he must know the history of this. And he must know where other countries are going. I mean, you look at Iran, which, you know, we have the sanctions there, which is, you know, I guess part of their economic problem. I won't say we shouldn't be doing it, because they are, you know, they are headed by a bunch of people that have some issues. But the fact is, what's the first thing they're doing, Kevin? They're putting money into the system, and their inflation rate is off the chart. And oh, by the way, so is their stock market. And so is Turkey's stock market. Straight up with the money supply. Now, does that mean their economy is healthy because their stock market's going up? I'm going to say no. Now, if you can't look at those two situations and look at ours and say, let's be real careful here, something's wrong with you. And we're paying these people to be that person that says, let's be careful here, instead of, wait, what's the problem? I see no problem. I mean, come on. We're not talking about dragging a guy from underneath the bridge and asking him to do economic policy for him. We're talking about the best people we can allegedly find, and we're paying them and are coming up with these dumb policies. Or let's put this in. They're not dumb policies, but they're going to say that if they overshoot, they're telling you that there's no problem when everybody in the world, even our own self a couple times, have said it is a problem. Why do I need to listen to this guy tell me?
They're not making economic decisions. They're making political decisions.
Well, yeah, but somebody always has to. But every single time, the people that have to dig ourselves out of the hole are people like you and me and our listeners. I mean, Janet Yellen is still going to be running around making $7 million in 2 years. You think she'd be pissed off if I mentioned how much money she made in one of the questions? I think so. I think I'd never be invited back.
Yeah, I got a feeling that she's pretty easy to piss off.
Yeah. So, $7 million you made in 2 years since you went to the Treasury or head of the Fed, was that for stuff you did while you were the head of the Fed or for now? And by the way, would you like to have gone...
Yeah, was it a down payment on now?
Yeah, was it a down payment on now? And oh, by the way, would you really have liked to have been out 3 years and made it an even $10 million before we brought you back in? I mean... How do these questions just kind of wander off into the sunset? I mean, you wonder why we're in the shape we're in. I mean, I don't know. So, do you hear anybody in your classes? I mean, we used to ask all kinds of political crap a lot of people. I was never a hand raiser. Milton Friedman, of course, he loved to get knocked off the topic. That's all he would talk about was all the politics and what's going on with the Fed and everything. I mean, he'd do his class for 50 minutes, and we'd be 25 minutes talking about the stuff going on in the world. Do your guys ever knock you off topic and actually talk about these sorts of things? Am I going to get a job? Is my place?
We do, and I'm as likely to raise them. Now, we don't get into, I don't do partisan politics. That's just off the table. It'll piss off too many people, and it's not worth it. But have we, in the past, have we gotten into healthcare and some of the issues with that? Yep. Do we get, especially because I'm so supply chain centric now, do we absolutely get into what's going on with China and what's ethically appropriate? Yeah, we do that all the time, and I think I told you the fellow from the Uyghurs Association. I played that interview in class this semester. And we got into it a lot because we had to talk about where you're sourcing parts and so on, because local area, there's a lot of imports from China and from other parts of the Middle East, and so we talk about that kind of stuff, especially as it relates to treatment of workers and all of those kinds of issues. We've got, we spent a lot of time over the last couple of years, in the Trump era on tariffs and making sure we understand how that works, what the mechanics are, who pays it, et cetera, and why you would do it and why you wouldn't do it. And, we spend a lot of time on those kinds of issues.
Interesting.
It can turn partisan. I think people are pretty good at biting their tongues when you frame it in a nonpartisan way. Then, we actually wind up with productive discussions because people start talking.
Well, let's kick this more around on
the concept rather than the people.
Let's kick this more around on Friday, Kevin, because it is interesting how people are partisan. But the fact is, the federal government's broke. So, I mean, both sides have to be able to sit down and say, "What are we going to do?" And there's only two things. Stop spending or find some more money, but you can't get blood out of a rack. Anyway.
Yeah, if I taught in the accounting program, I probably would be spending a lot more time on tax policy.
S&P futures up 14, NASDAQ futures up 97, trying to bounce back from yesterday. Be right back, Mr. Russell Rhodes.
Is your business being challenged by the complexities surrounding healthcare reform or other matters related to human resources management? If so, then Cognos HR can help. A longtime friend and contributor to the Stocks and Jocks radio program, Cognos HR provides its clients with a perfect blend of strategic consulting and day-to-day HR management to drive overall improvement in business performance. Companies that join the Cognos HR family are better able to manage healthcare costs, enhance benefit offerings, and improve employee satisfaction by leveraging our access to Fortune 500 benefits. Our innovative onboarding and payroll technology, along with our constant attention to detail, enables us to provide the highest level of quality service to our clients. Now, your time and energy can be focused on generating business and increasing your bottom line. We'll take care of the rest. For more information, call us at 630-401-8810 or search us on the web at CognosHR.com. Cognos HR, innovation in human resources. Licensed in Illinois and Arizona.
Interested in promoting your business to a high-end audience comprised of entrepreneurs, traders, executives, and the everyday business person? Consider advertising on Stocks and Jocks. With a devout listenership covering the Chicago market, along with a vast online presence, advertising on Stocks and Jocks may be just what it takes to put your business over the top. For more information, contact me, Matt Weber, at matt@stocksandjocks.net. That's matt@stocksandjocks.net.
Hear ye, hear ye! The Homer Broadcasting System is on the air!
Stocks, Jocks,
Stocks and Jocks.
Stocks and Jocks.
You are out of control!
Right here, right now, right here, right now, right now.
There's something happening here. What it...
Well, my pick, Stocks and Jocks. I'm Tom Howell. Out of all the musical lines that I've ever heard, there is no doubt that has been appropriate in all 10 years we've been doing the show, isn't it, Matty? Something happening here where it isn't exactly clear?
Yeah.
I mean, it's pretty scary. SPV is up 16. NASDAQ is up 103. Russell, how are you? Where are you? We thought you were back. We'd be back in school this week.
I'm going to school a little bit later.
All right. I thought maybe we'd see your smiling mug.
I had a hard time getting out of the bed this morning.
You must have watched the Hawk game to the end or something, or watched the...
I was up late. I saw the nice little tribute. Did you guys see the SIBO in the background?
Tribute to what?
To Kane.
Oh, I didn't... I just saw the part where Coach K came down, or Coach Q came down and was...
Came down. No, they did a tribute to him, and he came out when he was captain or whatever for the first time, and at the beginning of one season, and they took a picture that we had all over SIBO with SIBO Vicks on the board right behind him.
Oh, really?
Nice.
Here's a great... I don't work there anymore, and I can't get in trouble for this. So, you know, Dr. Whaley down at Vanderbilt was the creator of Vic, I know there are other people that also try to take credit for it, but he's the one that SIBO wrote the check to for his 60th, and he also, even though he grew up in Canada, he also grew up a big Blackhawks fan.
Really?
So, he and I did a thing together at Berkeley, and then just to kind of make nice and do something nice for him, I got a copy of the picture that we had in the lobby at SIBO. And we got Kane to sign it, and we got it framed, and we got it given to him at his 60th birthday down at Vanderbilt. But after we got, this is the best part, after we got it made, before we got it framed, we scanned it in, and two or three of us have copies of it framed in our own office as well.
Well,
hell yeah.
Nothing wrong with that.
But I can't, they were talking, someone else who you and I both know, who will go unnamed, like, and his name's not Slim. He mentioned, he goes, yeah, that picture we have with the old SIBO logo on it, it was in the tribute last night. I'll try to dig it out and send you a picture of it.
How high up the chain was he at the SIBO? Just saying.
How high
was he up the chain? So I can guess who it is.
The unnamed person.
Yeah.
Oh, the unnamed person. It's MK.
Oh, all right.
So did you scan...
Yeah, the disappointment in your voice there.
Yeah.
It wasn't a high-up person. We did all that at the opposite, to kind of behind all the higher-ups back.
So did you scan after Patrick Kane signed it?
Let's get this thing made. And I said, I'll get my wife to go get it framed. And when she was supposed to be getting it framed, we got copies made and got them for ourselves, too.
That's awesome. Did you get the scanned copies autographed as well, or did you scan after the autograph?
Scanned after the autograph, man.
There you go.
Wow. Well, good for you.
Maybe when we during the break, I'll see if I can find it, and I'll take a picture and put it out there. I've been gone from SIBO for 3 years, so I can't get in trouble for
this. You're past the statute of limitations. There you go. I want to tell you, one of my episodes like that was they had all kinds of things that PCW wanted, Pullman, that were just kind of sitting there. It wasn't a whole lot of them, but there was some stuff like how's this for a word, Manny? There was a Victrola, handmade by RCA, one of the original ones that was given to George Pullman, right? It just was sitting in the office. I mean, I'm sure Price still played. There were a few other things like that around, you know. There were letters from George Pullman to Henry Ford and stuff. All that stuff should be like in the Smithsonian, I think, but there was a picture in one of the meeting rooms. It had kind of degraded. You would need somebody to... It was a huge painting of the city of Denver going through some, like, mountain area. Now, for those that don't know anything about railroad history, in the 30s, they had trains called streamliners. Because when you have a locomotive pushing the thing, you know, a freight locomotive, you're only going 55 miles an hour, you don't really care so much about aerodynamics. When you start going faster and faster and you want to use less gas, you want to make the thing more aerodynamically sound. So a streamliner, you couldn't pull the cars apart because on the sides, the car could move, but there were metal things that it moved within, so it was streamlined. And the front had kind of a bullet nose to it, and it was just one whole train. I mean, you couldn't break the thing up. Well, you could break it apart, but it was a big problem. And so they had, the first one was called the City of Salinas, and then there was a bunch of other ones. There was one called the City of Denver. And it was the most beautiful thing you've ever seen. And the thing, I think it would, I mean, this was a problem for freight, because you're running on the same tracks as freight. America always, the U.S. always had that problem, where Europe didn't. I mean, everybody talks about having fast passenger liners. Well, that's fine. But you're going 100 miles an hour running up the ass of a freight train at 55. What does that get you? You know, it's like having a Ferrari in the Dan Ryan, basically. And, so, actually, people do have Ferraris in the Dan Ryan. Let's say Ferrari in the Eisenhower. So, so all of a sudden, the thing is just behind the file cabinets. So the place gets bought by Wheeler Brader Fye, and the chairman's wife was known as a stealer of artifacts whenever they bought a place. And she was going to end up with, and of course, she'd already made a tour, but she didn't see this one because it was behind the filing cabinets. So my buddy says, you like it, nobody else cares about it, I'll give you a move ticket, throw it in your car and take it home. I couldn't do it. Absolutely couldn't do it. And I know the thing is in the trash bin someplace, or else she had it cleaned somewhere and sold it to somebody personally. But I couldn't do it. I would have scanned it, yes, but I couldn't take it. I just couldn't take it.
you'd have duplicated it. But
yeah,
you
but I couldn't. Yeah. I couldn't just take it. Hey, did you have a chance to listen to the... well, first of all, I don't know if you were listening the other day when I was talking about the steps Turkey has taken and how the president of that guy, is he going to cause the next world war or what? That guy in Turkey. He could be the Archduke Ferdinand, I think. But I hope
they're in a unique geographic and lots of other positions. They're kind of like the crossroads of everything, aren't they?
Let me put it this way. How many people are young and old enough, not young enough, to ever use, they ever played the game Risk?
I played Risk.
And if you had the number one pick, where would you pick?
That I don't
remember.
Somewhere
between Russia and Europe.
You picked Turkey.
Which is Turkey.
Because you could go to three continents from the same spot.
Yeah, makes sense.
And I mean, they are absolutely in a key geographical position. And and so I mean, when they went through the, oh my God, he's firing this guy because he's raising interest rates to combat inflation, I immediately went to the Turkey's money supply on Google, and sure enough, there it is. It's up like 2.5 times in 3 years. And now the guy's trying to fight the inflation. This guy's bitching at him because, or fired him because he's got the interest rates up. That to me, our future is there in a microcosm, Russell. How can it not be? Same thing happened in Iran. Same thing happened in Venezuela. I mean, what are we doing? Not to the same extent, but.
Right. And, you know, this is devil's advocate, and I don't necessarily believe what I'm getting ready to say, but the fact that most things are purchased and sold in our dollars, whereas for Turkey, they've got to exchange their currency for something else to acquire things. I do think that we have a unique advantage, but that doesn't mean that we can just keep printing money without thinking about it.
I think it gives us an advantage,
you know,
to where, but I also think that if we screw it up so far that we get in a hole, I think it's harder to dig out of the hole because we're bigger.
Yeah, and also, gosh, if we get in the hole, who is it that we can turn to kind of help us get out of the hole?
Well, the Chinese love us.
Emerging markets can. They ain't going to help us.
No.
They're gonna say that they're showing up to help us, and then they're gonna lecture us for an hour about how stupid we are.
Well, I mean,
and maybe that's what we deserve.
Well, the whole idea that we can't. I don't think that as a country, I mean, in a non-war situation, and we had the same problem before World War II. I don't think as a country we can come down with a policy regarding China, because the attitude of the people in this country, I'm not casting any aspersions, I'm just stating a fact, the attitude of the people in this country is, we don't care what China does as long as my blue jeans are $10 cheaper. I don't think whoever's president, you could be, you know, you could be Caesar. And you're, I mean, as I went through, I did some research a few years ago, talking about being really dumb on a Saturday morning where I was born. I tried to figure out who had the first welfare system. And I think the Romans did, or the first one that people know anything about. So, of course, me and my Latin, 4 years of Latin, I sort of wasted in high school. I did learn a lot about Roman history. So I dig back in, and sure enough, the quote is, even Caesar couldn't lower the dole. And once you get to the point where there isn't anybody here, I mean, it's going to sound awful, but we're some people in this country, hopefully they'll stop, are willing to go up and beat up totally innocent Chinese people, but you're still gonna buy your blue jeans from China. I mean, that to me is so ignorant, I can't even go there. I mean, that's why I haven't mentioned it. So, but the fact is, if all of a sudden we stopped buying stuff from over there and everything got more expensive, everybody'd be really pissed off. I mean, it's just the way we are. And I don't understand it, but that's,
you know, it goes all the way back to, it's the economy, stupid, but it's more of it's people's personal economy. And one of the ways that I think the government has kept the masses at bay through one of the more difficult times that, and maybe the most difficult time for the country in my lifetime, is by giving them some money.
Well, sure, yeah.
So that they can turn a blind eye to, you know, some of the other things that are going on around them.
Well, if you're
because if you got no cash and you're worried about your own situation and very upset about your own situation, I think you start to project that on a lot of the other negative things that are going on around you. I think if your personal situation is, you're not as concerned with it, you don't necessarily get as upset over the state of the world.
I would agree.
You know what I mean? You know, you're not the if you're at Ceres, and when it was open, if you're at Ceres and things are going extremely well and something kind of negative pops up on the TV, you're like, well, you know, that's just kind of the way it is. If you're at Ceres and you lost your job 2 days ago and you just had a terrible job interview and it's 1 o'clock in the afternoon, and something negative comes on the TV, you're gonna bitch and whine about it a lot more.
Yeah, you better not order another series drink.
Because your personal state. We've kept the masses' personal state at a level where a spark hasn't made things a lot worse.
I would agree. And
make things worse, but it could be a lot worse.
I would agree, and I think that some of the, I've been saying this for an awful long time, and I don't know if I ever maybe uttered it to you, but when things are growing, and everybody, if the growth rate is 2.5-3%, the real growth rate, not the nominal growth rate. By the way, that name's going to come back up pretty soon. That word, people are going to talk about nominal growth, versus real. Haven't heard that in 20 years, but the if every if you really get the feeling, because I have the feeling. I mean, I absolutely, well, not just a feeling. I happen to think I'm right. When things are bumping along, you know, 50s, 60s, 70s, not so much the 70s after the inflation, but the most people, if Russell all of a sudden is a PhD and I'm not, and he got a 5% raise last year and I got 2 or 3, you know what? Russell deserved it. He wouldn't have got the PhD. I didn't. You know, you can't. How do I hold that against him? When I was watching the Cubs, he was studying. I mean, come on. But you get the feeling when there is no growth, and you can make the argument that we've had no growth for basically 12 years here, in total, or very little, if you throw an inflation pop on it. Even if you say the inflation was 1.5%. What are we down to in growth? 0.5% over the last 12 years, something like that. I mean, what's the published numbers? 2.5 maybe. It's not 3. It's not 4.
Yeah, but real wise, we haven't been expanding that much.
Yeah. So every time you see somebody getting a huge bonus at some company, or you see some company buying out another company, or something untoward happening somewhere, you don't get the feeling that the person deserves it. You get the feeling that somehow they connived it. And he got it because some other four guys didn't get it, and that's really bad psychologically and really very un-American, because we never used to think that way. We never did. I mean, Edison was Edison because Edison was a genius. That's why Edison's got the money, and you know, for a long period of time, we're willing to catch him a break. That's not the same as getting your electric bill and find out in the last 10 years it's like doubled. When nothing else is doubled. There isn't a soul I know who, you know, unless you got some huge promotion or young and all of a sudden got a new job, it's had a doubled of their salary in the last 10 years. And yet these guys think it's in their purview to be doubled because they're a monopolist. And so every time that electric bill goes up, I get the feeling somebody else somewhere is not going up. And it might be sour grapes, but I don't think it is, because I mean, PTI is fine. But I'm saying it's not, I mean, it's not right. It's not American. It's not the generation. I mean, how many people in your generation, Maddie, think that you're going to do better than your parents did?
I have not asked everyone in my generation.
I know, but I mean, what is your feeling?
So I don't know, but it's definitely not as confident as generations before us.
Right, and well, you are extremely lucky. You married a terrific person with a great education, and she's got personality to burn, so she's always going to do fine, and so are you. You know, but how many people do you know are like you guys? I mean, in terms of talent, you guys are the 1%ers or the 5%ers. And I think that...
Well, we're definitely not 1%ers, I can promise you that.
I said in terms of talent.
But I can tell you that our friends, our group of friends, are in similar places as us.
But I'm sure if you
think... It's not like we're way ahead of any of them.
Well, but I think if you thought back to all the people you went to high school with and all the other stuff and expanded it a little bit, I don't know, how are they doing?
I don't know. Yeah, I'm sure it's a mixed bag, just like any other generation.
Yeah. But I mean, there's no dramatic jump up like you had with the GI Bill or something like that, where nothing changed society more than the GI Bill. You know, where all of a sudden guys from farms are going to college and like, holy, look at the job I got. And my dad's sitting there as a sharecropper. I mean, right? I mean, we're not seeing that sort of jump this time. I don't think. Well, that wasn't even my generation. It was one before, but... You know what I'm saying is you could see them fighting about the taxes yesterday without even at the Janet Yellen thing, Russell, and it's all about who's going to pay. And guess what? I don't want to pay. And I don't like to see corporate tax rates go up, but I also know that when you get to the point where corporations are paying 7% of the bundle and it looks around to me like they got more and more of the money, I don't know how that lands or how does that play out, right?
Mm-hmm.
I mean, I don't know what the answer is. I'm saying, unless you come up with the questions.
No,
go ahead.
No, we're kind of, yeah, and there's no, the problem is, even if you came up with the best solution in the world right now, how are you going to get both sides to agree on it?
Well, it's very simple. I pay too much and everybody else pays too little. But if you have 300 million people with that attitude, it's a rough solution. I mean, I think the entire amount. I mean, when you did you have to take a bunch of taxes when you were in grad? Well, not so much in grad school because you're in the economics part. But Did you ever do any tax theory? Because I did that both at Notre Dame and at University of Chicago. And I am stunned by the amount of taxes we pay here. If you take all the taxes down the line.
Not in depth, but I've a couple of years ago, and I actually talked about it on here. I had a student that was in one of the, I can't remember which finance class it was, but I was talking about tax avoidance and, you know, how companies, you know, some things that they'll do to avoid taxes. And I had one student that just went off on me about how, you know, companies shouldn't do that. They should just, you know, they shouldn't try to figure out how to pay less taxes. It's their obligation to pay taxes. And I was just like, I was kind of stunned. And I said, no, the company's obligation is not to the government. It's to shareholders. And you personally would, given the opportunity, you'll try to figure out ways to pay a little bit less in taxes. Or somebody comes up to you and says, you know, if you do something with respect to taking out a new mortgage, the interest on that will be tax deductible or whatever. You're going to take advantage of those things. And this kid, who I'm certain was not paying his way through college, will say, no, I won't. I'll pay as much in taxes as the government thinks I need to pay. Which just, my heart broke a little bit when I heard somebody say that.
Well, there is a
general attitude that, you know, that that's part of our obligation.
Well, there's a
fund the government as much as we possibly can, and that one always blew me away.
Well, there's a
but I took that and I dug in and I started figuring out what percentage of, you know, if you count, like, and I know the parking meters in Chicago are now privately owned, but I think of that as a tax. And if I go teach for a couple hours, the spot in front of Loyola cost me $9 for 2 hours.
I have a question for you in that regard. A very quick question. How exactly are they putting in 700 more meters in the city? Why would they ever want to do that if the money goes to somebody else?
I assume there's some sort of revenue split there or whatever. Or, you know, I assume when you get a ticket, that the ticket money goes to the city. So
right.
You put 700 more meters in, and yeah, you can't. I don't even know what a ticket is because
it's a lot.
It's been a while since I've gotten them. But let's say they're $50. There's an extra.
I think higher, and I think
$500.
I think if you're in the can,
$5,000 a day.
I think if you're in the can, they'll come in and try and get the money out of you too. There's no statute of limitation. There's nothing.
Yeah.
I have a question. It has to do with when you talk about taxation like that. Actually, Kevin found a YouTube episode where Dr. J and I were fighting about taxation on YouTube. And it's exactly like we would have the argument today. And I'm going to say that most males, and maybe, you know, to a certain extent, most females like looking at good-looking people of the other opposite sex. And you see some lady that's this new golf expert. She's spectacular looking, and she's always got some somewhat revealing thing in there. And you know, and it's fine. She's doing it on her own, and it's, by the way, it's nice to look at. Somewhere along the line, as more and more comes off, it becomes pornography. And nobody can define it, but you can say you've sort of crossed the line. That's something, you're way out of the spirit of just looking good in a nice outfit. You're just saying.
Well,
and it comes down to taxation is sort of the same thing. And I think if you are working at home and you put a corner office or on the place, for you not to be able to depreciate that as your home office, and for you to take advantage of everything like that, I would disagree with your student 100%. I mean, that's, if it's in the law, I mean, and you can do it legally, I think you should do it. However, let's say, for instance, you know, Stocks and Jocks, if we decide we're going to, we get a $2 million sponsor, which Maddie's supposed to be getting, and he's still, is that tomorrow that guy's coming in, Maddie? I mean, just saying.
Hopefully.
He's got a couple of guys. So say we had that. Now, would I figure out that if we took this guy out for lunch, would I deduct lunch? Damn right I would. I mean, I'd do everything I could because, you know, my obligation is to pay. But now, if all of a sudden Our buddy Thomas, he's an artist. Hey, you know what? Thomas could be an artist in the Bahamas. He didn't have to be here. We'll ship Thomas to the Bahamas, and we'll have a PTI office. And all Thomas does is once a week send us a schedule for the show. Geez, Russell's coming on Wednesday like he does every week. We're not talking about a big effort. And we're going to send $100,000 a month to that office. And we're going to pay Thomas, you know, all the rice he can eat. We'll pay him $2,000 a month. So all our profit now, and oh, by the way, we'll put the Stocks and Jocks trademark in that office too, which we'll now rent from this place. So everything we do here, all our listeners are here, Maddie's here, you're here, I'm here, office is here, listeners are here, maybe there's one person listening to Bahamas, who the hell knows. All everything we do here is now here, and now all our taxes are we're paying in the Bahamas, or Dublin, or some damn place. I think that's, to me, that's pornography. That sucks. That it is not what anybody intended. And Dr. J's point was,
no.
It's, Dr. J's point, it's in the law. I said, no, John, it's a carve out from the law that some buffoon in the IRS let go because maybe he's getting money in his back pocket or some judge or something. No way on earth when that law was written did somebody say somebody could take a U.S. patent or trademark, put it all overseas, pay rent to the overseas office and pay no taxes here. Nobody ever, I don't know, I've never read the tax law from start to finish, but I'll guarantee you that's not in there that says you can go ahead and do that. It's been some kind of a carve out. It's like pornography. Nobody ever said I couldn't take all my clothes off. Okay, well but, you know, so I'm saying,
yeah.
It's there's a line there that all of us sit there and go, that's why on the trading floor, there was always the just and equitable principles of trade. Where if there wasn't exactly rule at it, but your attitude was, if everybody in the pit did that, we wouldn't have any competition. We wouldn't, the customer would end up being a loser. It would be something that you could be fined for, right? So somewhere along the line, somebody should realize that, I think Starbucks, they had how many Starbucks locations in London, didn't make any money in London, but they ran the beans through, coffee beans through Amsterdam, and they had like three places, and all the profit was the Amsterdam. Somebody's got to look at it and say, this really stinks. I want to see your transfer pricing. And by the way, if it's wrong, you're going to jail. Right? I mean, just saying. So, I mean, now... go ahead.
I totally understand what you're saying around that. And I know what companies you're talking about with respect to that one as well. And I don't disagree that if you're sticking with the letter of the law, but not necessarily the spirit of the law, and doing things where you don't have to pay taxes in the U.S. even though you're doing all your business in the U.S. That one I can agree with my student on, but not taking advantage. Not utilizing all the deductions that are available to you because you think the government can do better with your money than you can. That drives me absolutely bonkers.
Well, if you got four kids and you write down two because you think the government owes you money, you owe the government money. I feel sorry for it. To be honest with you, why would you do that?
Well, I'll give you my great example around this one is, and it's somebody that's doing it much better with the money themselves than I think the government would, is Bill Gates. You know, the Gates Foundation is set up in a way that profits can continue to accumulate on Microsoft stock and other investments, and taxes aren't paid on it, but the money is doing some real good in the world. And I personally think the Gates Foundation probably does a better job spending money and impacting the world than the U.S. government does.
Well, if you set up a charitable foundation like that, we'll do this after the break. But if you and I ever set up something like that, when you get your bazillion dollars, probably before me, I don't know that I'd put it up as a charitable foundation because you're actually contracting yourself, I believe, to spend a certain amount of a year on charity, whether you make it or not.
You are.
And if you have a really, the market.
I feel like the number's 5%.
I think it's more than that. I mean, if all of a sudden Microsoft is trading 40, I think he's got a problem.
Right. Well, they're diversified beyond that. I know that, but the point is, I feel like there are people that have better judgment. They could spend the money and do a better impact on the world than all of our governments can.
I would agree.
And that includes, you know, like the UN. I severely doubt that the UN is spending money as efficiently as
somebody like the Gates Foundation.
I could actually tell you. I could actually tell you some stories about the UN. SP Futures up 16. NASDAQ Futures up 90. We'll be right back. Stocks and Jacks.
How much confidence do you have that your investments will make you wealthy? Do you truly know the odds? Welcome to Luckbox, the control freak's guide to life, money, and probability. Luckbox shows you how to gauge the likelihood of success before you commit to an investment or any other decision. And Luckbox is free for 1 year at luckboxmagazine.com/jocks. Each new issue dives deep into the current investing climate, separates the signal from the noise with relevant trade ideas, and equips you with cutting-edge tactics you don't already know. Luckbox is the essential magazine for proactive investors who are hell-bent on pursuing life, luxury, and happiness through sports, fitness, travel, food, spirits, music, and a whole lot more. Smart investors don't bet on possibilities, they play the probabilities. Luckbox is $7.99 on newsstands, but you can subscribe for 10 free digital issues at luckboxmagazine.com/jocks. Don't rely on luck. Get Luckbox at luckboxmagazine.com/jocks.
Are you one of the millions of people who suffer with pain? Do you wake up in the morning with stiffness in the lower back or neck? Why are you using medication to cover up the symptoms without treating the actual cause? Painkillers, muscle relaxants, and anti-inflammatories are not the answer. At ChiroMed, physicians are trained to detect the cause of your symptoms and to correct the underlying problem. If you're ready to listen to common sense and do what it takes to make changes in your body that can affect your health for the rest of your life, give ChiroMed a call and set up a complimentary consultation. They are located in Orland Park and can be reached at 708-403-2727. 20,000 patients over 22 years have been treated at ChiroMed, and over 90% of them have had positive results without medication or expensive surgery. Isn't it time you did something good for your body too? Give ChiroMed a call. 708-403-2727. That's 708-403-2727. Let's get you pain-free and living again.
Hello, this is Tom Howe, the Chief. We've talked a lot on the show about risk and suitability, about how your portfolio should match your age, income, and risk appetite. It's been hard for investors to maintain that suitability in the last several years due to a Fed strategy that has driven interest rates to virtually zero. You may have even heard that the Fed was trying to drive conservative investors to a riskier portfolio on purpose, for whatever reason. I'm sure you're aware of investors that took some increased risk, such as longer-term fixed income securities, and are now unhappy with that choice. At PTI, we've always stressed total portfolio risk awareness and tried to minimize chasing returns in a tough environment. Well, now it looks like maybe interest rates are moving more towards historical levels. Everyone needs to be aware of what that continued movement might do to your portfolio, both good and bad. We also have a stock market that seems to have stalled, at least for the short term. I think it's time for everyone to take a serious look at their goals, their risks, and their portfolios. Do they match? If not, we can help. We have a signature protected index program. We have ways to hedge against interest risk. We can make that portfolio right for you again. Go to PTISecurities.com or call us right now. The market can change very rapidly. That's PTISecurities.com.
Stocks, jocks,
stocks and jocks.
Stocks and jocks.
You are out of control.
Here, right now.
Hello and welcome to Stocks and Jocks. I'm Tom Howe. Mr. Matt Weber on the board. Mr. Russell Rhodes from various places, but now a Loyola professor. Is everybody staying in their Motel 6 all week or what? Nobody came back to campus, right?
That's right.
So, but everybody gets to use the weight rooms and stuff at Butler?
They have different weight rooms set up and practice spaces set up, places for tutoring, all that.
Really? Well, that's a nice deal. SP Futures up 17, NASDAQ Futures up 97. We're coming back two-thirds of yesterday, almost a Fibonacci return here. We can come back. We'll ask Russell about Fibonacci when he's going to start growing all those beards like that dude. A Dow future up 132. Over in Europe, we've got DAX down 81.5%. These guys are down more than they were last time, even though we're going up. A FTSE down 14.2%. CAC around down 11.2%. Europe stocks mostly lower amid concerns over recovery. Okay, they got concerns. So always got to write the headline. Nikkei down 590. That's 2%. Shanghai down 44.130. Hang Seng down 579. As they fall into correction territory. As a way of review, yesterday Dow was down 308, S&P down 30, and now we're up 16, so not quite two-thirds of the way back. We're probably 60% of the way back. And Seng down was down 149, and now we're up 94, so it is about two-thirds there. Bonds, unchanged now at 1.63. The Bund minus 0.35, it's down a basis point. Japan down a basis point, back down to 0.06. heading back towards zero again, which is unusual. Well, not unusual, but I thought they were pretty much past zero. Maybe not. Oil up $1.54. They got hammered yesterday. That's 2.7%. Brent down 158, 2.6%. Natural gas unchanged at 251. RBOB up 3 cents now at 192. We've got gold is up 570 to 1730. Silver up 9 cents, 2532. Copper up a penny, 409. And last, crypto, Bitcoin up to 1,800 to 56,874. Maybe we have for us Trevi Weather Sports.
38 minutes past the hour. Good morning once again to everyone out there. The Bishop Ford has been a nightmare all morning. We had an earlier crash this morning on the inbound side at Cottage Grove. That's all clear. And then two more crashes, one on the inbound side, one on the outbound side. We'll start with the outbound. This crash has been moved to the right shoulder right before 137th Street on the outbound side. Crash involving a vehicle that has its two right wheels on a semi-trailer. Somehow the car got under a semi, like in the beginning of Christmas Vacation.
Yeah.
And the driver, I guess, is okay. He's walking around out there, but I don't know if he turned underneath the semi or what the hell happened there. But anyway, it caused an issue on the outbound side just before 137th Street. And then there's a crash on the inbound side at 159th that's blocking the left lane of the Bishop Ford. So the Bishop Ford in both directions not looking great, and that's after a serious earlier crash this morning at Cottage Grove that has been cleared since then. No issues on the Ryan, normal traffic times on I-57 as well. Stevenson traffic starting to build up, but no accidents to report. Same for the Eisenhower, Kennedy, and Edens. Lakeshore Drive is looking good. Weather today, some sunshine and a bit cooler than yesterday, but still very pleasant for early spring, as we'll be partly cloudy with a high of 57. Right now it is mostly sunny and 54 degrees downtown. For our Phoenix listeners, partly cloudy skies with a high of 73 today. Right now it's clear and 49. In sports, the Blackhawks topped the Panthers last night 3-2. Coyotes over the Avalanche 6-5. Bulls were off last night. They'll welcome Cleveland into town tonight. That's a 7 p.m. tip-off. Suns beat the Heat 110-100. Chief.
Just got an email here from one of my buddies from Colorado. I've been trying to get on a show forever because he retired from NOAA. And one of the smartest men I've ever met. Got his master's at Ohio State in chemistry and his PhD from University of Rhode Island. Russell, how's that for pedigree?
Wow.
Yeah.
He's a smart guy.
But I asked because he lives out in Colorado, so of course sent him an email saying, by the way, you know those people that got shot. He says he didn't know any of the victims. The wife of a friend was in the store. She ran to the back and had until the cops found her and broke a locked door to let her out. She's shaken up but okay. Get a load of this. I mean, I did not put two and two together. I mean, Maddie and I talk about this all the time. He goes, yes, there will always be crazy people. Why let them or anyone have the very easy access to assault weapons designed to do one thing, kill people? Get a load of this. There were no wounded victims, only fatalities? I did not know that.
Yeah.
Did you, Maddie?
Wow. Well, gosh knows, I'm not an expert in armor at all, but
no.
I do know there are bullets that are designed to burst into lots of pieces when they hit something.
Oh yeah,
and those go along with the saw, and that's the deal right there. Is you get get shot in the shoulder with a little slug, it goes through, and you keep fighting. Get shot with something like that, it shatters all inside of you, and you're down. And so I would assume that has something to do with the type of bullets that were associated with that weapon.
That's really something.
Which I'm not a gun control person at all, but there really is no reason for individuals to have that type of those types of bullets.
Well, you know,
I remember the hollow tip bullets.
Well, then they're designed to go through a policeman's vest too.
Yeah. And I actually, keep in mind that I grew up in the South, so do not judge, but when one of my buddies got married, all the groomsmen got together and chipped in and bought him a really nice pistol.
A pistole?
And he immediately went out and bought himself a bunch of boxes of hollow tip bullets because they were getting ready to be illegal.
Yeah, oh yeah.
This is like 30 years ago.
It's an interesting world we live in. Hey, are you riding down to the game with Sister Jean?
My daughter and I are going to be sitting on the front row balcony wearing our cool
Gryffindor scarves and rooting on the Ramblers.
That's awesome.
I am going down on. I am going down on Saturday.
Is it at Butler or is it the is it the big field house downtown?
We're at Butler.
So you get to go to a game at Hinkle, which is pretty damn cool.
The Bankers Field House.
Hinkle.
That's the one we're going to.
Wasn't it Hinkle?
Hinkle is Butler. You must be going to
Hinkle. Okay, then I'm going to the one where the Pacers play.
Yeah, that's the big arena downtown.
Okay.
Yeah, that's what
that's where we're going to be.
That's what Greg said last week. He went and he said the balcony was full, but the first level there's nobody there but family or something.
I am, and I personally do not like crowds and I don't like people. So only letting 25% capacity is the perfect sporting event for this guy. It's why I'm a White Sox fan and not a Cubs fan, right there. I just laid it out.
Likes the half full stadium, short bathroom lines.
Yeah, half full stadium.
Short
yeah,
concession.
Don't have to worry
yeah.
about, you know.
God. Anyway, so when was the you got to be there. You're trying to go the night before. Or you leave early.
We're going to, it's a 1:40 our time game, so we're going to get up and leave around 9 or so.
Well, that's
but
cool.
this is the first time I'm going to be more than 15 miles from my house in over a year.
Careful, there's going to be Hoosiers down there. They don't like guys with cardigans and expensive pipes.
Hey, I'm all about it. If the University of Indiana wants to bring me on as a clinical professor, I would be all about being a Hoosier.
Oh, so are they, I know, I'm sure you got some sort of faculty access, I imagine, but are the tickets like a normal price or are they jacked up because of the limited capacity or do you know anything about that?
I am so far down the list that I did not get to buy the tickets through the school.
Okay. So you had to pay the regular price.
So what did I pay? Gosh, I think I paid about $250 each or something like that. It's funny. I basically got them off at Ticketmaster, and they're pretty good. It's like first row on that balcony. We'll be the only two people sitting there. I'll be the guy in the bright yellow cardigan with the burgundy shirt and the scarf and the golden burgundy scarf. I've got my whole outfit picked out right now. But I just for the heck of it, I looked at the ticket prices for some of the other games because. You know, Loyola's close, but we don't have the biggest fan base in the world, and I severely doubt there are a lot of people traveling from Oregon State for that game. But some of the other games, the tickets were more like $600, $700, and $800 for the same sorts of seats.
Well, I imagine first row balcony, when they have the lower level pretty much closed, have to be the best seats in the place.
Oh, got you. Yeah.
It's my youngest daughter is always all about trying to get on TV when we go to sporting events.
that's
really why I got those.
I got news for you. I've watched about 5 games there. I've yet to see a fan. You're above the camera at all.
Well, they're not allowing fans in the lower level.
That's what I'm saying. So they're not going to see you.
They were showing the Gryffindor kids.
Yeah, they'll zoom in.
Some of my students were at the game on Friday because I actually had to move a quiz because of the game on Friday.
I think we lost somebody.
I think we lost Russell.
I think the only way he's going to get on TV is to run behind Sister Jean when she's on.
Well, they show fans a little bit.
I'd love to go.
Coming in and out of timeouts, but during the action, I mean, you're not seeing anything,
right, so
obviously.
How does this work? I thought, well, this year's so different, but it used to be the reason why there was nobody at the first few games is people bought the whole weekend. So now, does he get the rest of the day, or were those tickets, or does he got to be out with Lyle?
He's back. You'll have to ask him.
Russell? Or
I'm back. Sorry. I touched my ear with the little iPad, the iPod thing, and hung up on you. We're going in the morning. We're coming back in the afternoon. I mean, we're coming right back after the game, three hours each way.
Well, the last time they had the NCAA is at United Center, which is years ago, you bought the whole weekend.
Or you bought a session.
Here's the interesting thing. Our ticket is for one game, even though there are multiple games there. So they're going to clear it out and then they're going to refill it. Now, if you're only doing 25% capacity, but you're not doing it in sessions like you did it before, they're actually not only getting 25% of the normal ticket revenue. See where I'm going with that? They're not doing sessions, they're doing individual games.
Okay. It used to be you bought the whole thing, and you bought the day.
Like I've been to the Final Four before, and you go on Saturday and you go to two games, and then you go on and then you go Monday night and you go to the final. And that's one game, but you have a ticket that's for two games. That's not how this worked. I got a ticket for one game,
so you don't get a chance to stay till the next game at all. Totally okay. Mm-hmm. That is different. I wonder if they're going to continue to be that way or what. Because I always wonder.
I personally think maybe instead of having the games all over the country, next year have all the games in Texas, and you know what I mean. It's kind of fun to have all the teams in the same area.
Well, that's for the NIT.
Traveling to it would be a nightmare, but
well, that's why the NIT was so popular for so long. They were all in the Garden. I mean, you could certainly do that in New York.
The NIT is all in Texas. The NIT is all in Dallas.
Okay.
My undergrad school, Memphis, is playing tomorrow night in the NIT. And if Oklahoma State had won Sunday night, it was going to be Oklahoma State, which is my PhD, versus Loyola.
Which would have been perfect.
I'm going to be the guy in the orange shirt with the Gryffindor scarf. I'm not going to be doing that now.
In the Loyola section?
Yes.
When you're in the front row, accidents can happen.
I'm well aware, but we're kind of a liberal arts type school. I'm not afraid of many of my students.
So, who would you have cheered for, Oklahoma State or Loyola?
I think I would have cheered for Oklahoma State.
Oh my God,
that's bad.
What?
I'm
on a year-to-year contract at Loyola. I'm always sweating it in May or June of every year if I'm going to be teaching there the next year.
Well, I get so that, but
I'm going to be an Oklahoma State graduate my whole life.
You know who's he starting to remind me of?
That's true.
Maddie, he's starting to remind me an awful lot of Claude Rains in Casablanca. Right now the wind blows from Vichy, so I'm from Vichy. I had lunch. A guy bought me lunch at Oklahoma State. I'm an Oklahoma State fan this afternoon. Okay. This kind of thing.
Well, I'm an Iowa fan because we obviously got bounced in the second round, which was brutal. So
yeah.
I just like I did a few years ago, I just adopt Loyola as my second team, and that's it. Let's
go. Close to you.
DePaul sucks.
I put a picture up yesterday because I do twice weekly videos, and I've got work things behind me for my consulting firm. And I replaced all the work stuff with like a picture of Sister Jean and a couple of other things for the video yesterday. And had people that I never in a million years would have even thought would have known who Loyola was, writing Go Ramblers and stuff like that on my Instagram.
Well, their enrollment and everything had to have received a major boost four years ago, right? I mean,
it did. There was a lot more interest. In fact, my office at Loyola, I can see across the lobby where people come in and bring their kids in to go visit and do a little tour of the downtown campus. And they were busy the year after that. The same thing happened in Memphis when Memphis lost to Kansas in 2008.
Sure, yeah.
Saw a big bump in enrollment as well. But what we saw that was different, and we're still seeing the repercussions of it, we've always had a bigger female than male population on campus, even in the business school. And over the past couple of years, that's changed to more of a male population. And I think if you were going to go to a Catholic school in Chicago, you went to DePaul because they traditionally were better at sports. And if you were female, you thought about you might be more likely to end up at Loyola. In fact, I asked students at orientation what attracted you to Loyola, and inevitably, I will always have a couple of female students go, "Oh, I just think Sister Jean's wonderful."
Well, I mean,
that was a funny reason to pick a college.
Well, DePaul is our
population has shifted to be more male than female.
Your neighborhood, I say yours, DePaul has gone from almost closing to being by far the biggest Catholic university in the country. It's not even close, like twice the size of Notre Dame or Georgetown or any place. I mean, DePaul has made a tremendous advancement, and they took over half of downtown.
I was going to say they bought up half of Lincoln Park, and they have some downtown buildings too now.
Yeah, so I mean it's a serious place, and not to say Loyola isn't, but I'm saying Loyola.
DePaul is approaching 24,000 students in enrollment.
Yeah, what's their name? Got 10, something like that. 11, maybe?
I can find out.
Well, I mean, Georgetown, all those plays.
Notre Dame has 8,600.
Yeah. I mean, you know, it's
so DePaul's three times bigger than Notre Dame as far as enrollment.
Yeah.
And I mean, that's DePaul. I didn't know DePaul was that big. I mean, we've got a little over 17,000, I think. But anything over 20 is generally like a state school.
Tim Tracy, my former partner, graduated DePaul. He's a basketball player there, a real good one, in fact. And he went in, he played, I think he went to, where the hell did he go? With the Brother Rice? I'm not sure where he went in the South Side. But and at that time, they didn't have any dorms. He graduated, I'm going to say, 71, maybe. They didn't have any dorms. They had a three-bedroom building with a bunch of three-bedroom apartments. That's where the basketball team lived. And their training table, there used to be a place called the Seminary Restaurant, where the McDonald's is, right on where the corner where Halsted and Lincoln come together there, where the McDonald's is, or McDonald's used to be. It's the pyramid-shaped triangle. That used to be called the Seminary Restaurant, and the basketball team had a room in the back that was their training table, the Seminary Restaurant.
That's a Chipotle now.
Yeah, it's a Chipotle now. And they were the only people that were there, because the neighborhood was awful. And DePaul started buying stuff up around the place. Same thing University of Chicago did. They made a long-term commitment to the neighborhood. Started any time a place went, you know, burned down or knocked down or whatever, they bought it.
Mm-hmm.
And they just kept growing and growing. All of a sudden, a dorm went up and another dorm went up. And now they are. I mean, they've done, in terms of urban renewal, they were responsible for a whole area. I mean, when I went to University of Chicago, you only went across 63rd Street or 61st Street with like an armed guard. Now there's like law schools over there and stuff. I mean, you still can't go to 70th Street, but they've managed to expand the turf quite a ways. And DePaul and University of Chicago, their own police force, they didn't trust the Chicago policemen. I mean, they had phones. If anybody had a problem at night, you were 10 feet from a phone. Picked it up when you called. And it was a... I mean, they essentially had the 40-year plan or 50-year plan, both places. And Loyola, you know, left their hospital.
Well, Rogers Park isn't the nicest neighborhood either.
That's what I'm saying. It didn't have the advantage, the neighborhood spot. And also, they left when they moved the hospital out of town to Maywood, a lot of the city fell in they didn't like the city didn't like them anymore. I mean, why'd you move your hospital? Because they had a med school. It was downtown, right? At one point, there was Loyola, there was Rush, there were five med schools, University of Illinois in a square mile area, right?
Northwestern.
Area. Yeah, but they were all in the same spot. Well, Northwestern was always by Northwestern, but I'm saying they're considered by some people, certainly the Sisters of Mercy, who hated the Jesuits anyway, to have abandoned the city. But now, you know, the area, they still are doing okay up there, and they've got a nice downtown campus. So
our downtown campus is beautiful.
Yeah. So
how is that basketball arena?
Our business building is wonderful.
How is that basketball arena up there? I've never been there.
I haven't been there for a basketball game. I've been there for a couple of other events, and it's really nice for an on-campus thing. It's actually part of the student center. It's attached to the student center.
That's cool.
They use it for a lot more things than just. You know, they're constantly using that space.
It's
pretty nice. I don't think it's, it's not Wintrust Arena size. And I don't think, and this is totally hypothetical, but let's say the Big East came knocking and said, we want a second school in Chicago, or we want to replace the other school in Chicago with the better basketball school. I don't think that arena would suffice.
Yeah, that arena seats.
It's really nice, but it's, I don't think. I think they would. They'd have to start playing games at the United Center or something like that.
Yeah, it seats 4,963 people. It says that arena on Sheridan, but you know Villanova. What they do is they have their on-campus arena that they'll play like non-conference games on or games that aren't that big.
Mm-hmm.
And then when they play a big game, they play downtown Philadelphia where the Sixers play. And I could see Loyola doing something like that. I wish DePaul would have done that. Built a small arena in Lincoln Park, played that for your smaller games, and then if you need to play, you know, Syracuse or something, I guess they're in the ACC now, but somebody big like Villanova comes to town, then play it at the United Center.
What's the name of the place in Philadelphia where the four schools, I don't know if they built it.
The Palestra.
Yeah, they all played there. St. John's
St. John's is in New York. It was Villanova, St. Joseph's, LaSalle, and Penn. Right?
Penn, yeah, because Shanny went to Penn.
Yeah, it's Penn's home arena.
Is that thing down or
it's still a legendary basketball arena, and they still host tournaments there for other schools that to play there. Penn State played a couple games there because it's such a cool arena, and then I think Penn plays their home games there.
I thought originally all four did, or at least. Like you say, some it's like the exhibition games that when they used to play.
And
they'd be on campus.
They do a non-conference tournament there in Philly every year too. But that's like a basketball mecca.
They all play each other there. Yeah.
Yep.
Yeah.
What does that thing hold?
Let me look it up.
Not very low. It's one of Matt's bucket list things is to actually go to that tournament.
Why would I want to go to Remodeled Garden?
I pay attention to you, Matt.
Yeah, I would. I love that. The Palestra, by the way, holds 8,700, so it's twice as big as Loyola's arena. But it's old. It was built in 1927, so it's almost 100 years old.
It's older than Russell and me. Just saying.
Barely.
Yeah. Russell, we got a dash, bud. Have a nice time.
Go Ramblers.
If they win both games, you might have to call in with a quick report early in the week.
I might have to do that.
We'd love to hear that. Take care of yourself. Right. Drive safe. SP Futures up 14. NASDAQ Futures up 77. Down a little bit from where they were. Back tomorrow, Stocks and Jacks.
What did we learn, Palmer?
I don't know, sir.
I don't know either. I guess we learned not to do it again.
Stocks and Jocks is brought to you by PTI Securities and Futures. Go to PTISecurities.com. PTI ProDirect. Trade for as low as a penny per share and a dollar per option contract. Learn more at PTIProDirect.com. Nadex. Offering an intuitive way to trade the financial markets. Visit Nadex.com. Home Source Realty. Call Audrey Johnson at 708-349-3456. Hamzy Analytics. Listen to Fari Hamzy every other Thursday and visit HamzyAnalytics.com. ChiroMed. Back or neck pain? Schedule a complimentary consultation by calling 708-403-2727. Dax Research. Tune in for David Andelman's technical analysis on Mondays and Thursdays and call 1-800-821-4968.